Thank you very much to our four panelists who are now invited to join us at the table for a few questions and discussion.
Martin Bitson from the Department of Pediatrics in, at McGill. this was very interesting, very different and diverse insight into field work. I have a specific question to Dr. Fraser. Since we are developing at the McGill Health System since many years, OASIS system for medical record keeping and for particularly lab-based and other results tracking, the biggest issue always is confidentiality. How do you address that on a web-based system with multiple users and developments?
It's working. So basically, I don't think the microphone's working, but I should have mentioned that. It's, you know, in the short talk, you're always trying to be selective, but actually, it's obviously a very critical issue. And there are two main pieces to this. I mean, one is the technology. And that, I think, is the lesser of the two, because in a sense, there are a number of good tools that allow you to encrypt data. And, you know, well-designed websites that use an SSL certificate, for example, will provide a good degree of security. The problem is that you have to train people to understand how to use that, to understand password protection and all those kind of issues. And you also, you really need to have a policy and a legal environment to deal with this question. And just a simple thing that, such as who owns a medical record, who owns the data for an HIV patient, is really not well worked out in a lot of countries. I mean, Rwanda, because it has been so actively engaged in this, is starting to put together some real frameworks for that. Haiti, which is another country, the main countries I work in, is not really there yet. And they were actually working on that before the earthquake, and we were talking about this last week when I was there. And I think it is a real concern to me when there is no real way of determining what happens to that data, and also there are no sanctions potentially in countries that don't have a legal system. So what people do in Haiti at the moment is that the employment contracts for organizations that, you know, for example, for data entry staff or data managers, they will have in them clear instructions about, you know, ownership of data and what you're allowed to do with it. But the problem comes if you have third-party organizations that are, or, you know, if the government asks you to share data with someone else, and how does that get managed? I think it's a very big issue.
One of the increasingly recognized and maybe the biggest threat to human capital development in the world is micronutrient deficiency between conception and 2 years of age that locks whole generations of kids into worse intellectual and physical development. So my question is for you, Alan. Is there any brain imaging on this problem in terms of brain development linked to which micronutrients, what's going on? It's a problem of enormous public health and economic significance. And I'm just wondering if any of those networks you mentioned, or if you're aware of any evidence looking at the science underlying that enormous human tragedy.
The project that comes to mind, first of all, is the MAVEN project. This is much like the project that I described for normal brain, but for children who are children of mothers with various challenges, nutritional deprivation, spousal abuse, substance abuse, nicotine abuse, alcohol abuse. And that's a study that's doing much the same thing as I described, but for those kinds of situations.
What about in the developing world?
Right. So the Cuban project is the one which is probably closest to what you're describing. And this, although I don't have in my head any specifics, that project is looking at developmental challenges, nutritional deprivation. There's a link between the Cuban group and Stuart Schenker's group in Toronto, looking at Council for Early Child Development. So they're exploring basically the issues that you're describing in the Cuban context. We can talk more about it offline.
Thank you.
I'd just like to give a comment, Eliane Belgero, on the last presentation around narratives. What came up for me was the importance of the inner narrative of the communities that are involved in the research. And one aspect that I think is really important in terms of publishing whatever data in global health is having voices from the communities be co-authors or co-editors in anything that comes out, because there are great studies, and I think there are opportunities for researchers in underserved communities to have exposure and to gain understanding and be involved in this process, and I think this is a great example. And I just wanted to know, are there any initiatives to spread that out?
The answer is yes. So the community members that are really involved with the project will be co-authors on all of the academic papers that are published, and they'll be involved with that process because that's part of the capacity development that we would like to see in that community. But also, they're going to be attending conferences with us. For instance, there's an International Polar Year Conference in Norway in June, and they'll be co-presenting this presentation with us. So the goal is to find funding to allow them to travel to conferences with us to be co-presenters. The tricky thing is that there's not always funding available to fund community members to travel to conferences, but there's generally funding for students. So it's right now it's just a question of funding.
We have time for one more question.
My words, team. Aside from the therapeutic aspect for the community, I can see a number of ways in which the data may be useful to the researchers who initiate the project. For instance, looking if health concerns are reported more when the person reporting has the ability to phrase it in various kinds of media as opposed to just writing a letter. You could also possibly look at whether policymakers respond differently to the same concern posed in pictures versus media versus a letter. And another thing I think studied maybe the correlation between how often a particular narrative is told versus how much concern the community puts on it. So say you have six pictures of the same problem, maybe find out if that would possibly allow the people in the area to realize that this is a concern for the community. Are there any plans to use the data that the narrative create?
Thanks, that's a really good point. And what I really like too is the digital stories have allowed the community members to speak in their own way, which is what you were saying. And I find that Inuit have a remarkable way with words, and they capture a concept or an idea very eloquently in a few short words. And so that's really coming across now in these digital stories is how they're projecting that and teaching us volumes about issues and concerns in the community. As to how they're going to be used, I like that idea in terms of the correlation of, you know, how often these issues are coming up. Remember, too, we're dealing with a fairly small population. That'll be an interesting way to look at the stories that are coming up. I like that. The other thing, too, is trying to get a sort of a broader perspective, too, because a lot of the people who have been doing the stories, we aren't really getting elder response at this point, but it's brand new. This is the first community, the first time we've tried it out. So I think it's a matter of familiarity and comfort. So I think that type of work in terms of correlations might be better off when we get a bit more comfort with the entire project style, basically.
Well, please help me in thanking our four panelists for sharing all this information with us. And lunch will be served just outside the room, and we'll be back here in an hour. Thank you.